Hi everyone, this is Gary welcoming you to the LL Research Radio program In the Now, Q&A with Carla and crew. Today is Tuesday, October 9th, 2014. Carla L. Ruckert is an author, mystic seeker, and primary channel for LL Research. The crew in the title refers to those of us at the LL Center, beginning with Jim McCarty, Carla's husband, scribe for the Ra Contact, and president of LL Research. Austin and I, devoted seekers of the Law of One, manage LL from the home office. LL Research is a nonprofit organization dedicated to freely sharing spiritually oriented information and fostering community, and towards this end has two websites, the archive website, llresearch.org, and the community website, bringforth.org. We will be discussing questions that come from you. If you would like to ask us a question live on the air, please call 646-595-2294 and press the 1 key when prompted. If interested in submitting a question when we're not on air, please visit our show's webpage at blogtalkradio.com/LLResearch. When submitting questions, please remember that this is a Law of One Q&A. Try to keep your questions as spiritually oriented as possible. Again, I'm Gary, and we're talking with Carla L. Ruckert and the home crew of LL Research. Is the home crew ready to go?
We're here.
We are.
Ready.
All right, sound check complete. Then we will move on to our quote today, which comes from May 18th, 2003. Kuo says, "It is very helpful to place within the consciousness little helpers that bring the mind back to the vital questions. Who am I? What am I doing here?" Usually when that question is asked, it is in the context of a relationship, and we may say that a shortcut to the second question's answer is to know that love is always the reason that each entity is in a given situation at a given time. Consequently, the question becomes, where is the love in this moment, and how may I witness to it? When that realization comes, the ensuing action carries with it the energy of soul growth. For in dealing with the practicalities of the small, significant life, the fundamental bases for that life have been invoked, and consequently, the energy body is balanced within the awareness of identity and purpose.
Thanks, Gary. I looked through the raw material and did not find the suggestion about little helpers, so I am assuming that this comes directly from Kuo and is their way of bringing us into the part of the raw material where the Ra group is trying to express to Dawn the different questions that one may ask the self when looking to find the Creator. You know, look into a mirror, see the Creator. Look into another mind, body, spirit's eyes, another person's eyes, see the Creator. And it ends up by saying, ask yourself, where is the love in this situation? I think that's what they're getting at here. It's a sometimes appalling thing to ask yourself that question. Because if it has occurred to you to ask it, it is possible that there is no apparent love in the situation that you can see, with the exception of yourself. This means that it falls upon you, upon each of us, as we seek to understand the context of a situation from the largest and most efficient point of view possible. Do we have the love that it takes to furnish that love that is within the situation. Oh, sometimes that's so hard. I had a horrible landlord back actually in Watterson Trail when we were in the midst of the golden days of the rock contact. Everything about that place was perfect except the landlord who had a bit lacking in honesty. When the curtains fell apart, he told us it was our fault and that we should replace them. Given that the picture window was enormous, that would have been a very expensive thing to do. So we went through that entire experience with the picture window open to the passing breezes. Not the window open, but the curtains completely pulled apart, because to try to work them would be to allow them to fall down. We never could close those curtains. Of course, we were up so far from the road that it didn't really matter. You couldn't see anything in those windows anyway. But it was a certain amount of work to generate the love for bad landlord. I could go on. I could go on for a long time, and you would be very bored. I'm sure you get the point, and I'm sure you have had bad landlords or difficult situations where there was no possibility of his being mistaken, anything short of his simply refusing to take responsibility for what was his. That's difficult. I worked and worked to stay at one in my heart with this bad landlord. And long after Don died, I was still dealing with this person who had decided to make Don utterly miserable by going into escrow and then asking for $5,000 more than had been agreed upon. This was infuriating to Don, and he wanted bad landlord to straighten up and fly right, do the right thing. Bad landlord was not about to do that, and Don just said, "Handle it," to me, and left the scene. I was unable to handle it successfully, and finally I gave him over half of the money that he wanted simply to end it. But I never broke the oneness between us, not in any overt sense. What went on behind my mind, I allowed myself to have my private thoughts. But I did not get into a wrangle with him or break oneness. We remained in unity and apparent goodwill throughout. That was a tough one. We all have tough ones. And when the answer to where is the love, you are the only chance there is of there being love in this situation, then it's your turn to step up to the plate. You may not think that you're capable of it. You are. It's a matter of valuing the high road to the extent that you are willing to make that final effort. to be love, to affirm the truth, especially when it is not at all obvious. It is not a time for doubting the self. It is not a time for doubting the path that you've taken. You are holding the space for love. As we always are, all of us. But when we're doing it all by ourselves, or it feels like that, it's tougher. It's tough to be alone out there. But it's more important then than it is at any other time to ask yourself that question. Where, oh where, is the love? If you are completely exhausted, you are still not out of advantages, because you have the spirit. You have unseen friends whom you can ask for help. And when you open your heart to that help, you can feel the love flowing in, and oh, what a blessing it is when it does. So if you feel exhausted, take the time to go into the silence and wait for the spirit to bring you that supply that is never ending, that the Creator has in infinite supply. And have faith. Remember that story in the Bible where Jesus is in the midst of a huge crowd, and this poor woman is crawling into the bottom of the crowd because she can't get near him, and she's very ill. And finally she reaches his feet, touches the bottom of his robe. And he says, "Who touched me?" You know, and looks around. Nobody can define it. And she says, "I did, my Lord. I touched you because I need your help, because I'm sick. I need to be made well, and I couldn't get close to you," and so forth and so on. She tells her story. And he just says, "Go your way. Your faith has made you well." Perseverance is all important. Be the love. And when you feel exhausted, ask for help. And wait in absolute surety that it will come. For all we need, as the Beatles said, is love.
Amen to that. Thank you, Carla. Mm-hmm. We'll move on to the next part of our show where we take questions from listeners. And our first question actually is coming from a phone call. Area code 281, you are unmuted. With whom do we have the pleasure of speaking today?
Hi, guys. This is Michael. I spoke with you about 2 months ago, I think.
Yes, hi, Michael. Good to hear from you again.
Thanks for having me back. I have two questions for you. And the first one is dealing with free will. I'm curious to know, because I've read the raw material, it's the closest I've ever come to feeling anything that was close to right, but I question everything. And I question the fact that we have free will. And I'm curious to know, since I can't contact the raw collective, even though I tried, They're always in a tunnel when I call them on my celestial cell phone. And for them to answer and say, here's what we mean by free will. So I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on free will. That's my first question. What does the Ra Collective mean by free will?
One quick phrase that comes to my mind is what Ra said, that every entity is free to, and I think this is verbatim, accept, reject, or ignore the creation about oneself. That's where my exploration of free will would start. And while I churn that through my brain, do you guys have any thoughts?
Yeah, that's pretty much it, just being able to choose your path. We're supposedly portions of the Creator that the Creator made so that it could know more of itself. And in order for it to know more, then it was necessary for us to have free will to choose things that we might do as individuals that maybe somebody else wouldn't do, or we would do it in a certain way. But it all enriches the Creator, so we use that free will to get to know ourselves and get to know the Creator at the same time, and it also serves the Creator by allowing it to know more about itself.
Yeah, I found the quote, Session 10, Question 12, and I mean, this is just repeating what you've probably already read and considered, Michael, but Ra says, the Law of One has as one of its primal distortions the free will distortion. Thus, each entity is free to accept, reject, or ignore the mind-body-spirit complexes about it and ignore the creation itself. So I guess I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so it's a restricted choice.
Yeah, I've seen really interesting probing discussion on this question, and that seems to be part of the consensus, or part of the thinking, is that yeah, there are parameters. There are certainly restrictions, you might say.
Which means
one
you can't
thing
be
that
free, which means you don't have to.
Before the veil was dropped, Ra sort of equates the dropping of the veil with the expansion of free will, and at one point they even say that before the veil there was no such thing as free will. And when Don questions further, Ra says, well, the Logoi before the veil thought that they were offering their entities free will, but they didn't fully understand the extent of free will until they experimented with the veil. So there seem to be degrees of free will, of more restrictions or less restrictions, and I think that you're kind of correct in thinking that free will within a certain set of parameters.
Yeah, it's all restricted. If they would have just said, you have a restricted choice, I wouldn't question free will. To me, they're just using the words incorrectly, because you can't even be free if the Creator's everything. You can't even be free from Creator. It's an impossibility, because wherever you go, there's a Creator of creators everything. And I have numerous examples, just like I'm sure you guys could easily come up with numerous examples of how we just aren't free. We have restricted choice. Kind of wish they would have just said, out of
that,
your restricted choices,
restricted
here's what you
choice.
Get to
I
do.
I don't understand what anybody's talking about when they say restricted choice. Define that for
well,
me.
Okay, well, here's a restricted choice. Let's say, as the Creator supposedly is an infinite being. It can never die. Well, it's restricted in what it can do. It can't die, so it has to continue existing. It's a restricted choice. It has no choice given to it but to exist. I could say, by my free will, I freely choose to never harm another being, mentally, physically, spiritually, or emotionally. But in order for that to happen, since everybody has their deluded sense or their brainwashed sense of what's good and what's bad and what could be harmful and what isn't, I would have to control everyone's reactions to my actions and thoughts to make sure that I harm nobody. Or the only way for that to happen, too, would be for not to exist, but then
well,
I couldn't ever fulfill
thing there
my...
Is, that's not how it comes out. We don't get things right, but we intend, and that's the important thing.
But then it's not free will. Again, it's a restricted choice. My choice is not to harm anyone, mentally, physically, spiritually, or emotionally, but
well,
I'll never be able to...
for a certain reason. You
what's
get
that?
A benefit from restricting. You don't have to restrict yourself.
But it's my choice.
Opposite,
you're telling me I have free will, but it's a
restricted
choice.
The choice that you're talking about is chaos. There have to be restrictions within which we work.
So then you're not free.
Otherwise, there's no game. And there has to be a game that makes sense for us to be able to penetrate that which we are attempting to look at. If we had absolutely no restrictions to free will at all, we'd have not a wonderfully free universe, but we'd have chaos. We wouldn't have a universe at all. It would be that which cannot be seen or heard or grasped in any way, because in order for us to be able to grasp it at all, we have to work within certain parameters, our own life being one parameter, the end of our nose being another parameter very important to free will.
I can just prove my point.
I want within myself, but if I want to maintain my honor among others of goodwill, then I refrain from speaking when it is needlessly cruel or irresponsibly rude, you know. So I think that there will always, in a baseball game, for instance, you're working within the parameters of the game. And sometimes those parameters are just amazingly detailed and complex, but they're there. And you can only have a home run if you have those particular parameters. Otherwise, you don't have a game. And you might as well take your ball and your bat and go home.
Well, you just proved my point. If you restrict chaos, chaos now is restricted from being chaos so that there could be some formulation. And even if there's a chaos theory that there is, if you know chaos theory, at least from my simple understanding of it, that there are patterns within chaos itself. So in order to have an experience based on saying that everything would be chaos if you didn't have some kind of constraints, well, those constraints are restrictions. So it just to me, it validates that for myself, we don't have to agree on it. We have restricted choice. It's not really free will.
No, I recognize you from before, yeah.
Well, we restrict our choices for a reason, so what's so bad about that?
It's the problem with the wording. You know, if we're going to teach, let's teach it right. Don't say we have freedom when really it's a restriction. We can learn from restrictions. See, I agree that laws create cohesion, but for every law you create, you also take away a freedom. So don't use the word freedom. Don't use free. Because if everyone is free, then nobody is free. It's like saying if everything is light without a speck of darkness, you wouldn't know it was light. It's the same thing saying everybody has free will, where a creator is free.
I would also note that Ra used the idea or the concept of free will synonymously with confusion. They call the law of free will the law of confusion from their perspective.
Mm-hmm. Which is why I was calling up. I'm trying to piece this together to figure out why are they using the word free will as in choice as opposed to maybe using you have a restricted choice and there is a law of confusion.
So what terminology is your preference in your philosophy?
Yeah. So my second question is, it's going off the basis of the perfection idea. Okay, if Creator is perfect, then to me, and again, this is just my perception on it, there was a time that there was a veil, and then they said, okay, well, wait a minute. No, or there was a time where there wasn't a veil. And then they said, well, we're not getting what we want, so now we're going to, somebody came up with a veil, a logos or sub-logos or sub-logoi came up with a veil. Well, if Creator was so perfect, the veil would have been there from the beginning.
Where in the Law of One does it say that the Creator is perfect?
I can't pull up numbers and stuff right out front of me.
Ra does use that word. They describe healing as the entity realizing that realizing the law of one, that the self is already whole, complete, and perfect. What does the word perfect mean to you, Michael?
Well, there will be no errors, no mistakes.
Is there then a mistake in deciding, hey, let's try an experiment of veiling consciousness? Is that a mistake?
It's okay to call it an experiment, but don't use the word perfect, because perfect would already exist in perfection without improvement. I'm sorry, here's actually one of the things I wrote in one of my, or it's coming up in my next book. Perfection is something that is not able to be improved upon. That would be perfect.
What if it's all just play then? What if it's all the creator deciding to experience itself in an infinite variety of ways, each way, be it death or birth, destruction or creation, veil or non-veil, perfect.
No problem with that whatsoever, but don't call it perfect if something can be improved upon, because that's what perfection, or my ideology of perfection would be.
Endless approach to perfection, and I would not believe that the creator would call itself perfect. I would not find that true.
Even in the last conversation, one of you guys, and I can't remember which one, it wasn't you, Carlo, and it wasn't Jim. Someone said all is perfect, all is well, or whatever. I'm going, well, how can you say it's all perfect?
That's a Christian catchphrase from one of the saints who said, all is well and all will be well. And that is stating that all is well within the idea of looking at that which is apparently not well at all. So it's always, for us poor humans, confusing and difficult. But I don't think we're striving for perfection here. We're striving for a life of honor, a life of love, a life lived to the best of our ability, taking the high road.
But Carla, that's an ideology of perfection also. It's the same thing. It's just using a different word. So if you're going to claim that as
perfection.
It's not perfection,
doing the best we can. And I don't believe I would claim that I was perfect, or that anybody would claim that he or she were perfect in doing what he feels to be his own best and highest self. It's just the best and highest self that he knows how to do. And always there is grounded within that the total realization that you honestly don't know beyond that which you know. You know, your limits to your knowledge are finite.
Or my restriction. See, I can't even use my free will to be perfect, because it doesn't, free will to me doesn't exist. I can exist, I can experience, but I...
You get to have choice.
A restricted choice.
Okay.
Call it whatever you want.
So did you ask something?
Well, it's not calling whatever it wants. I'm trying to find out what's the finite truth. You know, the finite truth seems to be weird.
Yeah, the idea of perfection, the way that I see it, is perfection in the terms you're speaking of, Michael, at the level of the Creator, does not necessarily exist in the subsequent levels of the Creator. And if you're talking about something like before there was not a veil, and then there was an experiment to try a veil because they felt like the lack of a veil was imperfect and was not doing what they wanted it to do, I think you have a valid question. And if everything is perfect, why change? But at the level of the Creator, there is no subsequent change. There's no linear aspect to that. The Creator doesn't experience a pre-veil and a post-veil. At the level of the Creator, the veil always existed and the pre-veil always existed. There was no change between a pre-veil and a post-veil. That happens at the sub-level, sub-logoi experiment, and that is obviously not perfect. And it's a mystery. Ra keeps saying that the end of everything is a mystery, they don't even grasp it, we're never going to be able to grasp it, but the base level of the Creator will be a mystery to us, and we're existing within the experiment where things are not perfect. But their perfection, supposedly, according to Ra, lies somewhere in that mystery that we can't necessarily get to with our finite, restricted minds.
Another thought to consider as you ask yourself this question is the idea of apparent distortion. One of my favorite sections in the Law of One, Ra. Damn, didn't bring it up. Ra contrasts the, they say that the, in the mystical search for unity, the seeker need not consider concepts of space and time. Let me find this one. I think it's worth holding on to for just a moment. Exact phrase. Damn, didn't come up. They juxtapose the idea of apparent distortion with total total perfection. The notion being that what seems distorted, what seems to be a mistake, what seems to be this quality or that quality is only apparent. Underneath and all along and meanwhile, outside of the events that happen in time and the events that happen in space, underneath everything is infinity and unity and eternity that is without quality, that is without events, that is without choice. It is just being itself, and it's beyond all possible manner of words or thoughts that we could apply to it. That's why mystical teaching, which I believe is what is at the heart of the Law of One, takes one beyond the intellectual mind into the actual experience of mystery, of being itself. And if there's one adjective that applies to being and this level of existence that I'm attempting to point to, it's the word transcendent, in that it transcends any container, any category of thought or activity. Now, as far as the my own capacity to think about these things, the word perfect does seem to apply according to my understanding. But if it doesn't work for you, then that's quite all right. But I think it's entirely consistent with the Law of One philosophy. Do you have any further questions, Michael?
Oh, no, that was it. I enjoy hearing the feedback because I'm open to the feedback. You know, and I had also considered the fact where everything existed at once. You have perfection and imperfection. It just hadn't been experienced yet. And some logo I actually got to bring it forth and experience it and said, okay, well, now we had a pre-veil and now we have a veil. To me, I go with it mathematically. If you have an imperfection with a perfection, you add it all up. Does it still equal perfection? Just a mathematical approach. That's it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts. Thank you for your question. And we wish you a very good day. Your mic is muted now, and we are moving on to our question from our good friend JP, who loves to send us questions. JP writes, in Book 1 of the Law of One, on page 33, it says, you will observe the Valley of the Shadow of Death, which is preceded and followed by numerous accounts of what seems to be very hard, difficult, and trying times, to say the least. Does this not imply that even souls that are to be harvested into fourth density may have to experience some very trying times and even lose their third density form to severe earth changes and be reborn into a fourth density body onto the new fourth density planet? Many other blue school teachers, I'm not sure what he means by blue school, imply the transition will be very peaceful for most. Please clarify. I'll note here quickly to preface any responses that we may have that the Valley of the Shadow of Death part comes from actually the introduction to the Law of One when Hatan channeling is quoted, and the paragraph reads, it is extremely possible that damage will occur to those things which you identify with yourself in the third density. If we may speak plainly, you will observe the Valley of the Shadow of Death. These very words, my friends, have been spoken to you before, and yet you cling to that physical body and those physical surroundings as though your spirit were attached quite permanently to them. Carla, what Valley of the Shadow of Death is King James Bible language.
It's in the 23rd Psalm. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me, and so forth and so on. Now, people have differed in their definition of what the rod and the staff is, and some of the suggestions have been altogether interesting. But basically, the idea is that even though our life is lived in the shadow of death, that we can't get away from it, that we're doomed to experience it sooner or later, that we fear no evil because we are with the Creator, the Creator is with us, and we can do no more than experience shifts from creatorness to creatorness as we go from life to what looks like death in the physical, but is only a shift in terms of the Creator. We go right on, in other words. There's nothing to be scared of.
So this quote that JP's asking about is from an older channeling session. And at the time of the channeled message and at the time of the raw contact, the Confederation seemed like they saw a great probability for this kind of turmoil on Earth. It seems like they're using the Valley of the Shadow of Death in a very sort of ominous way, and predicting that we're going to see some difficult times in our future. But according to Kuo and other channeled sources since then, Kuo has said that because of the work of so many light workers and others who have put their efforts into channeling love and light into the energy web of Earth, the karma that was necessarily going to be expressed through this turmoil on Earth has been averted. They refer to, or some, I think Kuo has referred to it, but other channels refer to it as a harmonic convergence, where there was a great deal of meditators and light workers who really took effort into healing the Earth and to grounding this energy so it wouldn't have to be expressed in such a traumatic way. So that is one thing to consider for JP, and that this is sort of a dated channeling session that comes from.
That's true. But I do think that it was intended then and would be intended now if it were used, not in the literal sense, but in the figurative sense.
And JP's question is all future tense. It's talking about what will come. And the harvest, as we've discussed and channels have discussed it, is of our opinion that the harvest is happening now. It's been happening. And look around oneself now and you'll notice catastrophe, pain, suffering, discord, etc., happening all over. So people have been in the valley of the shadow of death and have experienced fear and death and so forth. And I don't think there's one broad what's the word for forecasting something that begins with a P? Prognosis?
Prophesy.
Prophesy?
Prognosis is good.
Of what is to come that will apply to everybody. I don't think we can say people will experience death and destruction, or people will, across the board, experience some kind of blissful, easy transition. I think we experience the results of our free will on multiple levels. On the individual level, we experience the results of our choices, and those results may involve some form of suffering in order to provide the catalyst. I should add the exact catalyst that we need, or we may, as a collective, experience the results of our collective free will. The processes that Austin was just describing about Earth changes are exactly that. It's that feedback mechanism. It is, these Earth changes are the result of our free will. So I think if you're going to ask what will happen, I think what will happen will be what results from our free will choosing or our exercising of confusion.
I have noted this before, but back around the winter solstice of 2012, I talked a lot about it because that was all people seemed to want to talk about. But people felt so betrayed when nothing dramatic seemed to happen. And it was because people were looking for something to happen in the physical. And I knew all along this was a change that was going to take place in the metaphysical realm, in the inner realm. And speaking, you know, please don't expect somebody to come and take us out of our misery. That's not going to happen. But we are shifting into ever more light, ever more density of light, which equals density of information. Now, here's what I think happens with a lot of people. They don't see that they have a personal responsibility involved here. They're waiting for somebody to help them out. Consequently, they're not working to be living in fourth density in terms of their mind. We know that living to the best of our ability, holding up the values of fourth density, you know, absolute love, compassion, forgiveness, you know, catchwords of that kind. If we approach every situation with the determination to have a reaction, to choose to have the reaction that is, as far as we know, our highest and best reaction in terms of living in fourth density instead of living in third, we can expect to have a great deal of help because we have so much information coming in. But you see, when you get a piece of information that says, please take a look at yourself as a murderer, please take a look at yourself as a thief. Please take a look at yourself, you know, and suggest these negative terms. And you say, well, I'm not that. You know, just deny, deny. I'm not that. Well, wait a minute. What energy seems to be pointing you towards is to take another look and to see what part of you might be stuck in that shadow self. What part of you, for instance, might be stuck in I can remember counseling a fellow who was absolutely certain that there was no more love, that they could not have relationships with women or even close relationships of any kind, and it was impossible and useless to try anymore. And I said, well, look, This is showing you some stuckness, some kind of pain that you experienced back when you could not defend yourself. And so you were placed in a situation of acting as if things were true that weren't true. Like, oh yes, I'm getting all that I need from my mother. My mother hugs me enough. Well, in this particular case, his mother didn't hug him at all. She had subsequently had another child. That child was very, very sick. And so she no longer had any time for anything except taking care of the ill child and then dropping where she stood to get a little sleep until the child woke up again. And when he realized that, he just saw the key, the penny dropped, you know. And he said, you know, it's true. I have been holding it against my mother all these years that she didn't love me enough. And that is very possibly a key to the reason why I don't trust anybody, especially women in close relationships, where you're supposed to be able to trust and know that a woman has your back and will never betray you. Well, somehow, somewhere, women always may be interpreted to have betrayed you. But is it true? Or is it just exhibiting a part of your stuck self? So anyway, this particular suggestion helped this guy out a lot. So I wouldn't know what part of the self would be stuck, but I would venture to suggest that in almost every case, receiving information that would suggest that you have to deal with part of yourself that is stuck, that the thing to do is to embrace it and say, yes, I need to investigate this. I need to really look at this. I need to dig, and try to remember the pain that you buried when you were a kid because of things that you couldn't help. That by the time you achieved an independence of thought, you had forgotten all about this. But if you find it again and bring it to life again, then you can heal it. You have to be able to see it first. That in Scientology, that's what they call clearing, and it's a valid concept. So I have experienced myself that by embracing what may seem to be a negative that I'm hearing the universe tell me, and really going into it, I have come through the other side and seen beauty and logic and the kind of order that only comes with love, so that all the gifts that I needed to see are there. If I were resisting, I would never get that realization. Jim, you want to talk about this a little bit, because I feel sure that you know what I'm saying.
Well, my take on it was that we're looking at this death experience that JP was talking about at the end of third density as we're harvested in terms of our Earth mentality and our third density mentality, and we don't really know very much. Understanding is not of this density, as Ross said, so that's why will and faith are important to us. But Carl and I have been reading a couple books lately by Michael Newton, Journey of Souls and Destiny of Souls, and what looks to be very out of harmony and disastrous and just rotten in this density, once we pass over, we see that there's a reason for everything, and it does make sense, and that we do begin to understand what's happening and why we do what we do and what experiences we have and how we experience harvest or how we experience anything in our incarnations. So I would recommend those books highly. They give you an overview which uses our ability to understand and describes what's happening in our choices before incarnation, between incarnations, as we review the one just finished, planning the one just to come, how we do all of this, why we do it, and how we put it together. And it just gives another view to what's going on. And actually, for me, it's removed a lot of doubt and even some apprehension about, well, what will it be like when I die in whatever circumstance it is. Anyway, I highly recommend the books, and they add a great deal to what we attempt to pass it for as understanding.
What was that author again?
Michael Newton, Dr. Michael Newton. He's got a number of books out, but Journey of the Soul is one of his first in 1994, and Destiny of the Soul is what you and I are reading now.
I have thought a lot of these books. They're very well done, and unlike most near-death experience books, he takes it that one step further. He goes on through the death experience, after-death experience, between lives, pre-birth, the next time, and so forth. So it's much more of a full view of how it works. It's very helpful.
To touch on some of the minor, maybe less important points of JP's question, he talks about 3D, third density entities having to lose their 3D body and then be reborn into a fourth density body. And I wanted to just talk about what Ross says about that, and that fourth density bodies supposedly will come about through evolution from third density. So generation to generational changes through basic evolution is how we'll end up with fourth density bodies. So in a sense, we will have to die to get our fourth density bodies, but the fourth density bodies will be created gradually as the Earth transitions itself. And I wanted to also touch on, I think, something that you were talking about, Carla, in that people being expectant of this coming harvest, a time of turmoil on Earth or a time of shift on Earth. And JP talks about how a lot of other teachers imply the transition will be peaceful. And I think that we are experiencing a shift right now, and things are getting more peaceful, even though things seem to be getting more violent. And I've talked a little bit about this before, but I looked up a little some of the statistics, and statistically speaking, we are, less than half as likely to be victims of violent crime in the United States as we were in the 1980s. The number of people killed in a battlefield calculated per 100,000 population has dropped over 1,000 times over the centuries, and even close to 1,000 times ever since 1942. And the death rates of genocide have gone down 1,400 times since 1942. And there's a massive trend all over the world of just declining violence and declining death rates from violent acts. And the world is gradually getting more and more peaceful. And I think that the shift that happens with this transition to fourth density is happening, but we don't see it because mass media reports primarily on all the violent things happening. And people mainly want to see the violent things happening. But while we're watching the violence on the news, things are getting more peaceful on Earth. And so I do think that JP is right, that it will be a peaceful transition, and I think it's becoming more and more peaceful as we go on.
I'll put my money on your vision, Austin. I like that.
I'm using statistics.
God bless them.
Anybody have any further thoughts to add?
No, except for the fact that if he is worried about the process of death, he might want to read about what Ross said about the steps of light, walking the steps of light in the process of graduation. That also is a very mind-easing piece of information.
JP, we always love your questions and love to hear from you, so please keep them coming.
Indeed.
It's 1:54. I had just a few minutes to work with. I don't know about a next question.
Well, let's give it a whirl.
I was going to quote, I found the one I had been searching for.
Yay!
When we were talking with Michael earlier.
Oh, I thought you had it.
The quote is, in the experiences of the mystical search for unity, these, that is, concepts of space and time, need never be considered, for they are but part of an illusory system. The seeker seeks the one. This one is to be sought, as we have said, by the balance and self-accepting self, aware both of its apparent distortions and its total perfection. I love that juxtaposition right there of apparent distortions and total perfection. So there you kind of have that dual vision where you see what seems to be on the surface. You see illusion for what it is. I mean, it's happening. It's there. But underneath and meanwhile and all around it and permeating it and in it and through it is total perfection. Whatever is transpiring within the illusion. If a planet like Maldek blows itself up, or if a planet achieves resounding peace and unity, either of those scenarios are perfection. And that's what Ra, that's one of the messages of the Law of One, that it's in this oneness, everything is perfect, whatever we may or may not do. And we can't enhance that perfection. We can't diminish that perfection. It's our total identity, and we can't change that identity. And that's the paradox of it. Why are we doing anything if it's all already done, already whole, already complete? Well, one of the mystical answers to that question is that the Creator wanted to know itself. So it made this game. it decided to play this game. And don't the Hindus have a word for that that they call Maya?
Maya, or Leela.
Leela, yeah, Leela, that's it. The creator just wanted to know itself, so created these many infinite scenarios to do just that, to experience itself, and somehow, I don't understand it, but know more about itself. So that takes us to 156. So I think our final song is about 3 minutes long, so we could say goodbye to everybody. Carla, would you like to?
All right. As always, I want to tell you we love you. We love you all. And we are here for you to the best of our ability, and that obviously is within limits. We don't know everything, and we might be mistaken. But anything we've got is yours. We'll give you everything we know about a situation. And hopefully in questioning spiritual principles, it does help to have all the different possibilities to think about. So here we are, the four of us, fools that we are, offering ourselves to do the best that we can to answer your questions, knowing that we won't hit them all right on the head, and knowing that we might not hit them at all. But we'll do our very best for you. So please ask us anything that you're concerned about or interested about. Tell us how we can serve you better. And just know that we love you.
I'm not quite sure what inspired you to say those words, but I really like them, Carla.
Thank you.
Actually, I am quite sure. So we'll wrap it up there. You've been listening to LL Research's In the Now Q&A with Carla and crew. If you've enjoyed the show, please visit our websites, llresearch.org and bringforth.org. Thanks so much for listening, and a special thank you to those who submitted questions, JP and Michael, today. If you'd like to submit a question for us before the next show, please read the instructions on our page at blogtalkradio.com/. Have a wonderful week. We'll be here next Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and we shall talk with you then.
And the old star